Blog Talk Radio.
Production.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I am Mansoor Bey, the host of Ask Mansoor Bey, where I encourage people to no risk and no reward, because when you manage well, you don't have to be a slave for money or an unfortunate circumstance. Maybe you heard, it's not how much you make in life, but how much you keep. Insurance is crucial in this matter, and no financial plan could be complete without considering the risk of loss. Now, insurance products are specifically designed to mitigate the many risks we all encounter in life. As experienced professionals evaluate insurance needs and products, we help design and implement insurance policies that suit each individual's needs. And the proper risk management and insurance planning are necessary to financial success, but I feel it's important to educate the user about debt, money, and investing to get a clearer understanding on why building an asset protection portfolio is their best bet. It goes without question that in this line of work, when advising clients on growing and protecting their wealth, I always get engaged in a discussion about the inner workings of money and the financial system. And normally, they are surprised to learn that our financial system is circulating promissory notes instead of money backed by silver and gold. We once upon a time did. Well, why is this important to know? Because ask yourself, what is a promissory note? Is it a legal debt instrument which one party promises in writing to pay a determinate sum of money to the other? Well, that makes money a fiat, which has nothing to back it but debt. And if you haven't already listened to my podcast on the Shatara Effect Caused Generational Debt for Millions, then you should. It covers more detail about the origin of debt and borrowing money. Now back to the money. There is a government publication issued by the Federal Reserve Bank titled Money or Modern Money Mechanics that shows a good clarity the system of fiat money and the fractional reserve banking. So I'm going to cover some important insights from this publication to give you a little better understanding about today's money. It goes without question that money is such a routine part of everyday living that its existence and acceptance ordinarily are taken for granted. Now, a user may sense that money must come into being either automatically as a result of economic activity or as an outgrowth of some government operation. But just how this happens all too often remains a mystery. So what is money? Modern money is a strange thing. To most of us, money appears as something continuously given to mortgagors, landlords, credit card companies, and retail to secure a place to live, you know, food to eat, and all the little things that make up what we call a living. Since living is made of money lending, it must be regularly collected, or to put it in another way, money is gathered by people who need to ungather it. For the working majority, whose only access to money is to labor under an employer for wages, earning money is an arduous task, and whole lives are revised, rewritten, and canceled just to make ends meet, leaving many of us too little time to ask how a monetary system works or even what money is. Now, according to the Fed's publication, what makes money valuable? Now, in the United States, either paper currency nor deposits have value as commodities. Now, intrinsically, a dollar bill is just a piece of paper. Deposits merely book entries. Coins do have some intrinsic value as metal, but generally far less than their face value. Now, what then makes these instruments like checks, paper money, and coins to be acceptable at face value in payment of all debts and for other monetary uses? Mainly, it is the confidence people have that they will be able to exchange such money for other financial assets and for real goods and services whenever they choose to do so. Now, money, like anything else, derives its value from its scarcity in relation to its usefulness. Now, commodities or services are more or less valuable because there are more or less of them related to the amounts. Now, money's usefulness is its unique ability to command other goods and services, permit a holder to be constantly ready to do so. Now, how much money is demanded depends on several factors, such as the total volume of transactions in the economy at any given time, the payment habits of the society, the amounts of money that individuals and businesses want to keep on hand to take care of unexpected transactions, and the foregone earnings of holding financial assets in the form of money rather than some other asset. Now, next in line, who creates money? Changes in the quantity of money may originate with actions of the Federal Reserve System, the central bank, depository institutions, principally the commercial banks, or the public. Now, the major control, however, rests with the central bank. The actual process of money creation takes place primarily in banks. As noted earlier, checkable liabilities of banks are money. Now, these liabilities are customers' accounts. They increase when customers deposit currency and checks and when the proceeds of loans made by the banks are credited to borrowers' accounts. Now, in the absence of legal reserve requirements, banks can build up deposits by increasing loans and investments so long as they keep enough currency on deem whatever the holder of deposits want to convert into currency. This unique attribute on the banking business was discovered many centuries ago. It started with Goldsmith. As early bankers, they initially provided safekeeping services, making a profit from vault storage fees for gold coins deposited with them. Now, people would redeem their deposited receipts whenever they needed gold or coins to purchase something, and physically take the gold or coins to the seller, who in turn would deposit them for safekeeping, often with the same banker. Now, everyone soon found that it was a lot easier simply to use the deposit receipts directly as a means of payment. These receipts, which became known as notes, were acceptable since whoever held them could go to the banker and exchange them for metallic money. Now, then the bankers discovered that they could make loans merely by giving their promises to pay or bank notes to borrowers. In this way, banks began to create money. Now, more notes could be issued than gold and coin on hand because only a portion of the notes outstanding would be presented for payment at any one time. Enough metallic money had to be kept on hand, of course, to redeem whatever volume of notes was presented for payment. Now, transaction deposits are the modern counterpart of banknotes. It was a small step from printing notes to making book entries, crediting deposits of borrowers, which the borrowers in turn could spend by writing checks, thereby printing their own money. So based on historical precedent, two specific powers are inherent in central banking practice: the control of interest rates and the control of money supply or inflation. Now, a central bank does not simply supply a government's economy with money, it loans it to them at interest. Then through the use of increasing and decreasing the supply of money, the central bank regulates the value of the currency being used. Now, it is crucial to understand that the entire structure of this system can only produce one thing in the long run: debt. And it doesn't take a rocket science degree to figure out this concept, for if every single dollar produced by the central bank, that means every single dollar produces actually the dollar plus a certain percent of debt based on that dollar. And since the central bank has a monopoly over the production of the currency for the entire country, they loan each dollar out with immediate debt attached to it. Where does this money to pay for that debt come from? It can only come from the central bank again. Now, which means the central bank has to perpetually increase its money supply to temporarily cover the outstanding debt created, which in turn, since the new money is loaned out at interest as well, creates even more debt. Now, the end result of this system without fail is creating millions of debtors. And miseducation has been the biggest component in making it impossible for the majority of us to ever come out of our perpetual money worries. Now, then you might ask yourself why the entire culture is saturated by mass media entertainment from all sides, and while the educational system in America continues is dumbified or slide ever since it became subsidized. And what your government pays for, it gets. When we understand that, then we can see the kind of student and the kind of education that is being turned out by these government finance institutions. Logic would tell you that if what is being turned out in these schools was not in accord with the state and the federal government wanted, then they would change it. The bottom line is that the government is getting what they have ordered. And financial literacy is one of the biggest issues that plague our society. 90% of the crimes committed are money related, yet 1% of the programs to cater to the people in society in or out of prison deal with finance. It would appear that they do not want your children to be educated or you to think too much. That is why our country and our world has become so proliferated with entertainment, mass media television shows, amusement parks, drugs, alcohol, and every kind of entertainment to keep the people entertained. Now back to the publication. What limits the amount of money banks can create? If deposits, money, can be created so easily, what is to prevent banks from making too much, more than sufficient to keep the nation's productive resources fully employed without price inflation? Like its predecessor, the modem bank must keep available to make payment on demand a considerable amount of currency and funds on deposit with the central bank. Now, the bank must be deposit money into currency for those depositors who request currency. It must make remittance on checks written by depositors and presented for payment by other banks, settle adverse clearings. Finally, it must maintain legally required reserves in the form of vault cash and or balances at its Federal Reserve Bank equal to a prescribed percentage of its deposits. The public demand for currency varies greatly, but generally follows a seasonal pattern that is quite predictable. The effects on bank funds on these variations in the amount of currency held by the public usually are offset by the central bank, which replaces the reserves absorbed by currency withdrawals from banks. How it's done will be explained later. For all banks taken together, there is no net drain of funds through clearing. Now, a check drawn on one bank normally would be deposited to the check or credit of another account. If not in the same bank, then in some other bank. Now, grain, cattle, cigarettes, even Bitcoin or anything can act as currency, but money must also serve as a unit of account in stores of value. Now, since coins represent equal values, they can act as a unit of account. A 10-cent coin is equal to 2 5-cent coins because cents are considered to be identical units, both scarce and hard to fake. Now, the intrinsic value of coins prove to be fairly stable and thus a store of value. Issued by the Department of Coinage from electronics, copper, silver, and gold was once one of the dominant forms of currency for a few thousand years. Now, paper money arose from promissory notes issued by banks upon deposit of real money, enabling merchants to conduct business without lugging chests of gold everywhere. Now, originally, the banknotes functioned in the same way coinage did, except that rather than mint coins, notes were issued as representatives of real value held in reserves. By the modern era, monetarily institutions is most industrialized nations had adopted some type of reserve system with a state-authorized central bank that issued the national currency. Though reserve systems and banknotes had practical advantages over coinage, both of them, paper representing metals and metal money itself, are designed to function on the same basic principle. Modern money, however, is different. Most currencies ditched the gold standard after the U.S. jumped ship in 1971, but those worthless bits of paper, aka fiat money, are still pretty good at being money. So one may ask, how can this valueless money work? Now, in the publication, it talks about what are bank reserves. Now, currency held in bank vaults may be counted as legal reserves as well as deposits, reserve balances at the Federal Reserve Banks. Both are equally acceptable in satisfaction of reserve requirements. A bank can always obtain reserve balances by sending currency to its reserve bank and can obtain currency on its reserve balance, because either can be used to support a much larger volume of deposit liabilities of banks. Currencies in circulations and reserve balances together are often referred to as high-powered money or the monetary base. Now, reserve balances in vault cash in banks, however, are not counted as part of the money stock held by the public. So where do bank reserves come from? Increases or decreases in bank reserves can result from a number of factors discussed later in the booklet. From the standpoint of money creation, however, the essential point is that the reserves of banks are, for the most part, whites of Federal Reserve banks. The net changes in them are largely determined by actions of the Federal Reserve system. Thus, the Federal Reserve, through its ability to vary both total volume of reserves and the required ratio of reserves to deposit liabilities, influences bank decisions with respect to their assets and deposits. One of the major responsibilities of the Federal Reserve System is to provide the total amount of reserves consistent with the monetary needs of the economy at reasonable, stable prices. Such actions take into consideration, of course, any changes in the pace at which money is being used and changes in the public's demand for cash balances. Basically, what they are saying is modern money is created from nothing. By spending it into circulation, money is destroyed through taxation. Now, the taxpayer dollar funds nothing. Now, it is deleted from the money supply, nothing more. Taxes do not fund spending because it is impossible for the monetarily sovereign government to need its citizens fiat paper to alter numbers in a spreadsheet. Now, taxation's most important function is to generate a base level of demand for the currency by ensuring those who benefit from participating in the nation's economic production, production or commerce must also use of its currency. Now, since taxation removes currency from circulation, taxation is also a lever to fine-tune inflation. This is why balancing the budget is a silly idea. Spending creates money and taxation destroys it. Then spending creates it again. Now, modern money is like a circuit. Money is spent into circulation and taxed back out. A balanced budget means that the amounts entering and exiting are equal. Deficit spending, more money being spent than being taxed, means the non-government, aka the people at large, must gain wealth. A surplus, more money being taxed than spent, means the people at large must lose wealth. Now, if the goal is to create jobs, increase the production of the economic value, or develop resources, then a budget surplus is clearly the worst strategy possible, and even a balanced budget unhelpful at the best. Now, if a government issues commodities, such as gold coins or notes backed by gold, then an increase in quantity by mint or by print will result in debasement or devaluation unless more gold is added. In that case, government has to either produce or borrow gold to impose new taxes to siphon money back to its treasury before it can spend without devaluing or debasing it. But modern money, currency issued at a flexible exchange rate by a monetarily sovereign government, is not the same thing as commodity money. Devaluation happens if a currency's fixed exchange rate, its relation to gold or whatever, is lowered by issuing too much of it. But modern money isn't fixed to gold or anything else. Now, inflation happens to prices, not money. And it is caused by markets, not by money. And I covered a small piece on inflation in my last broadcast, Cool Little Tricks for Quickly Estimating Return on Investment. So whether the money is gold or paper, if the total that people are spending is more than the total goods and services available to buy, the result is inflation, and it happens because demand is greater than what is available. Whatever the currency, spending more money than production can handle will inflate market prices. Now, if a government continuously spends money into the system without doing anything else, it will result in inflation because the total economic value in the system is unchanged, but with a higher total buying. One of the cool things about money, however, is that it can convince people to do and make things. And it is also to buy material and tools that people do and make things with. That means if idle labor and resources are available, money can be spent without inflation, so long as spending activates the idle labor and resources to add economic value to the society. So in other words, there is no reason to fear deficit spending if that spending employs people who were jobless or provides capital to workers to develop its value, because when money and value are added simultaneously, it does not provoke inflation. Public infrastructure projects, universal health care, working self-managed jobs, and tuition-free college universities, programs like these could be tomorrow's reality. And what does all this have to do with insurance planning? Everything. Because it's a little-known way that banks make money. It's a tax-free gain. And anyone who has any idea about income investment knows that this type of gain would be difficult for banks to safely achieve elsewhere. Policies have low risk levels that fit into the bank's standard investment criteria. They also help to diversify the bank's investment portfolio and immediately boost the bank's return on equity and return on assets. So when it comes to money, you want to think like a bank and act like a bank. Now, the way we are taught to understand money is rooted in an outdated model that developed when virtually all money was metal and this model cannot account for the reality of money today. Money is not gold. The truth is, and always was, that money is a way to distribute access to the actual value of real goods and services and the material forces and resources used to produce them. Now, the fact that the state accepts taxes and fiat paper and enforces its status as legal tender is enough to establish it as society's medium of exchange, despite its intrinsic valuelessness. In fact, this lack of value is what makes modern money more useful than gold ever was. Money can be as abundant as it cannot reflect that. Most of the time, it has been true that money is power, but no inanimate object has power until people give it power and forget they did. And knowing that takes its power away and returns it to its original treasury, which is you, where the real power always remains. So, if you're interested in determining the proper insurance coverage to mitigate all your risks, then you can start by contacting me at www.mansourbey.com. That's MansourBey.com. Or either through one of my social media sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram, moniker Ask Mansour Bey. And that's AskManSourBey, or by phone at area code 305, number 964-8858, and that's 305-964-8858 during normal business hours, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll basically give you a complimentary insurance planning strategy to provide the best plan of action for you, your family, and business, putting you on your way to building an asset protection portfolio, one or several policies at a time. Now, this goes without explanation. I know some people are inundated and swamped with trying to balance their life and finances between a job, family, children, even school and other commitments. So I have an opportunity for you to plug into what is called the 140 Club that will help you build a six-figure income in 1 to 3 years, allowing you to cash checks on three income streams along the way that pays out daily, monthly, and bonuses. That way, in the beginning, you can focus on what you do best while your income is organically growing and your insurance benefits are growing at the same time. Now, with that said, I'm out of time. I want to thank everyone that is listening to this broadcast, and I hope that I was able to help you understand modern money mechanics. Now, if you're willing to expand your learning and break old habits, then keep joining me weekly on Fridays. Also, please make a comment question about today's broadcast in the comment section. Also, if you're listening to this live, then the podcast will be available for replay shortly to use at your discretion. And again, thank you and God bless.